Sleeping hot? Waking up sweaty at 2 a.m.? It's not you, it's your sheets. And Care Aloha is your answer. They're the original for bamboo sheets that are naturally breathable, moisture-wicking, and luxuriously soft, designed to keep hot sleepers cool and comfortable all night long. You can feel the difference in how much cooler you sleep. Care Aloha's innovative bamboo fabric pulls heat away from your body so you fall asleep faster and stay asleep longer without cranking the AC. Improve your sleep tonight. Shop Care Aloha bamboo sheets now at carealoha.com. That's carealoha.com. Cooler sleep starts with Care Aloha.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that come out this week. And oh boy, do we have a big stack for you today.
Oh, yeah.
Versus all the previous ones. I know I say this every show, but it's really true this show. Because we are kicking it off with DC KO number 5.
Massive.
From DC Comics. Yeah. Written by Scott Snyder and Joshua Williamson. Art by Javi Fernandez, Zermanico, and Wes Craig.
He's
bringing the tournament to an end here and setting the stage for what's next from the DC Universe. Now, I probably don't need to mention this, but I will anyway. Spoilers past this point for absolutely everything that we're going to be talking about in the stack, particularly this, because there are so many twists and turns. Last issue, we found out that Lex Luthor was the one that won the tournament. Of course he wasn't. There's more going on
here. Go to bed, Lex, is what everybody said in this issue.
Lex thinks that he's going to be taking on Darkseid for the fate of the universe, but actually, thanks to the machinations of the Time Trapper, a.k.a. Skinny Doomsday, Superman has been saved in a pocket universe and given enough Alpha and Omega energy to battle Darkseid for the fate of everything. By the end, you won't believe this, but the DC Universe wins. Superman has left for a little bit, which we kind of knew anyway because we knew it was going away for the couple of months, but we found out why. And you're also not going to believe this. It kicks off DC's next big event. That's something that never happens at the end of events in comics. I'm obviously being a little glib. And later on, of course, we should check in with our DC KO brackets and see how close we all came.
Talk about go to bed. We ended the brackets. They're over.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Superman won, and I think I chose Superman, so I'm feeling pretty
That's
good about
That's why
my
you
bracket.
Want to go back to the brackets. There we go.
That's well, I guess we've done about. The brackets then, technically.
How... more seriously, how do you guys feel about this issue? How do you feel about this event as a whole now that it has come to a close?
I mean, it's interesting. There's this ended up being a lot more like a crisis than I could have ever imagined. Like, it felt so, like, different and, you know, irreverent in its own way and just, like, doing its own thing. This issue where Superman literally remakes the DC Universe from the Big Bang, I was like, how did they sneak a crisis into the end? And then this is a spoiler for the very end of the issue, but like they tease another crisis coming. And I was like, I know that's the whole thing, but I was really fooled this time into thinking they're not doing a crisis. Did you guys feel that way at all?
Yeah. I enjoyed this. I liked the ending. I thought this was a blast. It was one of those things where I'm reading and I was like, of course, Superman. Why did I think Superman wouldn't be? You know what I mean?
I wish you'd done that when you were building your bracket.
Yeah, I should. I just
you would have won like I did. And now you guys, I believe, have to be my butlers for years.
I don't remember
so
that.
This motherfucker who doesn't know how any sport works, or let alone gambling, let alone snake draft or brackets. And he's
I actually say, bouncing off what you were saying, Pete, I do think that comes down to Scott Snyder doing a good job of figuring out how to get us to think as readers – the thing that we know is going to happen is not going to happen.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because everybody going into this is like, well, it's going to be Superman versus Darkseid. And he spent five issues being like, absolutely not.
Absolutely
never gonna
not.
Don't gonna no happen. Way. No way. And we're like, all right, I guess not going to happen. And then he comes in and you're like, oh, you got us.
And I was like, hell yeah. Good thing Superman showed up. I was like, what? I'm an idiot. How did he pull it off?
Yeah. I never thought I'd say this, but great use of Emo Doomsday. It's the first time I was, like, happy he was there. And, you know, I thought that was a good
I'll be honest, I don't know whether that – I think those were the Zomatico pages, but that is the first time that I've liked how skinny Emo Doomsday looked. I thought there was a nice mix of the Time Trapper look and Doomsday. They figured out a good midpoint there.
Yeah.
I really loved the use of a Time Trapper here. Even the moment where Time Trapper, when he's like, hey, take my resurrection situation, and he sort of tears his shirt open, I was like, what's happening here? What are these guys up to? And I was like, hey, Doomsday, you didn't need to do that. I don't know what that was about, because he just, like, shoots alpha energy out of his hands or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, like, that was – I thought that was great. I do have – like, and I did enjoy this. I think this event was just excellent, I thought, top to bottom. I was surprised it was so light and airy, and this issue was doing a lot of work. Yet I'm still like, oh, I don't quite know how alpha and omega energy work together or separately. And it felt like I thought Superman was going to overpower the omega with alpha energy. But instead, it felt like he just sort of took all the energy. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what that means. And it felt like he did reinvent the universe from an alpha energy perspective. Was he resetting it, or is this a technical new universe?
Yeah, I don't know. We'll probably know more once they start giving interviews about this or anything. But my takeaway that was this wasn't like a crisis. This wasn't a reboot or anything. This isn't even necessarily like a soft reboot where they realign timelines, particularly because they just put out New History of the DC Universe. I think instead what they're just...
Yeah, but hold on a second there.
Yes.
You can say that all you want. This story was built around the fact that Superman trapped Darkseid at the Big Bang, and reinvented the universe from that point forward.
But I think that's the flimsiest of excuses for them to be like, here's our next level titles with the classic two-page splash of we're going to have a Jonah Hex title and Legion of Superheroes and all of these things. Like, I don't think this is even zero-hour level of reboot or anything like that. It's just being like, this is a fresh start, and it's really realigning it under what I think I was under the impression they were doing anyway, was that the absolute universe was formed on Darkseid's negative energy. Like, you can call it omega energy or whatever you want, but it's basically like, this is a universe built on evil and somehow heroes are rising out of it. Here, they're saying the DC universe, I thought they were already saying, like, the DC universe is kind of like powered by Superman in a certain way. And now they're just kind of formalizing it. Like, Superman is the DC universe. It all comes from the goodness of Superman, but also his fatal flaw of leaving Darkseid alive at the end. So that Darkseid's like, oh, you thought this was my only plan? I've got 1 million other plans going on at the same time.
Hey, let me quickly ask you guys, if you had to recreate the universe since the Big Bang, are you going to change anything, or are you just going to go exactly how it is?
I would get rid of corned beef hash.
Really? Wow. Bold. Interesting.
That I would switch gross.
Vegetables and candy. So vegetables taste like candy, and you know what I mean? So that way,
So you're saying candy is health, or are you saying like you finally want to do a fun dip that tastes like carrots and broccoli?
Yeah, I just think that more kids would eat vegetables. It wouldn't be this thing of like eat your vegetables if it was like
the problem is the taste, Pete.
That's what I'm saying. Candy tastes.
You're working on this. You're working on this for RFK or the Trump administration, or how real is this? You're part of the Maha.
I'm just saying. Could you put down your beef tallow, your glass of beef tallow, and just like explain this to us, like we're fine?
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I wouldn't change anything. I think everything's going great.
Oh wow!
Really?
Yeah, good. Across the board. I have no notes.
Yeah, take off that red cap that you're wearing.
To It's a Flash cap for our listeners, okay? It's the Flash, one of my favorite heroes. To get back to this comic book for a second, and not we've been talking about it for a while, but Justin, I think what you were getting at the beginning, which I kind of felt like there were beats that I liked in this issue, but I did miss the abject ridiculousness of issues 1 through 4. This was a little more like what Scott did over in Justice League with Perpetua and all of this universe building stuff, where I'm like, I don't need to see these big hands come out of a portal again and make the universe. I've seen that a bunch of times. And do you see, we can move on. We can do something different. And the beats like Superman and Darkseid falling back through various events as they fight backwards in history was cool.
Very cool. I like
Darkseid being like, I've cornered you at the Big Bang, and Superman being like, aw shucks, that's an old Kansas trick. Playing possum, and I was like, that's great too. This is fun.
I did enjoy that very much.
It was a blast.
So there were bits that I enjoyed in there, but all of the like actually getting to the plot of Alpha Omega Energy, not any of the ridiculousness of the tournament, I missed that a little bit.
Right.
You wanted more Braggot.
I wanted more ridiculousness. That's
well, and let me say, it's also interesting how little this was. This was truly a Superman story. I thought with the trickery of Batman and all of that, and the earlier part of KO felt very Batman heavy. Mm-hmm. He was almost a non-factor at the end of this, which I was really surprised about. Same with Wonder Woman, really. So that just feels not at all what I expected. Not a negative comment at all. Just very surprising.
And the last thing that I'll say about it, which kind of touches on what we were saying before, is I do think it did hammer nicely the point of Superman being heroic, which is a dumb thing to say out loud, but like just coming around, putting him in this impossible situation where it just pushes him in directions of becoming Darkseid and him ultimately figuring out how to solve the problem by being Superman from... Yeah. I'm thinking of the moment where this is all powered by the Heart of Apocalypse, which I don't know if you, as readers, while I'm reading it, I'm like, this feels wrong. It feels wrong to be like, I'm the Heart of Apocalypse, and everybody being like, okay, let's go. Let's do this thing. We're going to listen to you. You're running the tournament. And the fact that Superman figured out his own way, ripping the Heart of Apocalypse out of his heart and freeing all of his friends, I thought was a really lovely moment.
Yeah, I'd also like to just shout out the art. Some real epic panels, a lot of amazing fight sequences, done really well.
Particularly Wes Craig's art at the end, having him back after the DC All-In special where he did the Darkseid side of the flip book, I thought was very cool. So that was fun to see.
Ending those last couple pages that Wes drew, I thought were awesome.
Yeah. All right. Next up, Pete's favorite book of the stack, Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees, Rite of Spring #6 from IDW by Patrick Horvath. In the last issue, Sam Strong was revealed as the murderer she is, and she pulled out a couple of Home Alone-style booby traps right in her shop, killed some cops, killed some other people. This issue gets... crazy. This is in 12 issues, this is the craziest issue I think I've read of Beneath the Trees, where it gets downright apocalyptic at the end here. It's wild.
What I love about this is something that I feel like a lot of writers don't have the sort of fortitude to pull. We've been riding with this character in that Dexter way of like, ooh, I love how we get to sort of follow them, like, killing, but like not very much, and just like lying to everyone and being so nefarious. In this issue, like, Sam does awful things, and we are both seeing the victims of what she sets up and how horrible it is, and then some heroism from them. But at the end of the day, we're still in the head of Sam. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, that is a bracing choice that I enjoy. Like, no other book is telling story like this, so I really enjoy that, both from how dark it is and the fact that there's more, I think. We're going to get more of this.
Yeah, we are getting a third series of this, which I know Pete is very excited about, and I'll let you talk. I know you're champing at the bit. But I really do appreciate the audaciousness here. The art is great, as always, from Patrick Horvath, and I also appreciate how it came together, something that I think we talked about before with this Mini in particular, is how much time he spent fleshing out the residents of the town as we spent time with him. And that really pays off in a big way in this issue. Another fantastic miniseries, series of miniseries. Pete, let's hear your praise for this book. Take it away.
I
should mention for any of our listeners right now, Pete is vivisecting a duck live on camera. Take it away, Pete.
As a fan, he's just being a fan.
I just think that the art is so it captures not only like this tension, this like ominous the stillness is so creepy as well. I know it's weird to say because it's in comic book form, so of course it's still. But I just wanted to kind of talk about how well the artist captures this kind of horror, this underlying tension in these panels. It's a fuel of nightmares. I don't know how you guys read this book. It haunts me, and I hate the fact that we have to read it. But the art is such a next level achievement.
I go down to the newborn children's part of the my local hospital, and I just show these pictures and read this aloud.
Smart,
to all the
smart,
kids.
Yeah. Hey, just kids, it's story time.
Story time.
I actually usually bring it down to the Home Depot and be like, you see these paint cans in this book? Those are the ones that I need. Do you have any of those? I need those in stock. And so far, I've gotten all of them. They keep selling.
You've met a lot of really interesting people that way.
Yeah, it's great.
How often are you at the Home Depot, Alex? Checking in.
Just checking in.
There's a lot.
I got points. I got to get that card punched, the Home Depot card.
Dude,
that definitely sounds like a lie for a long time, bro.
You haven't been to the Home Depot since the 90s.
I'm there all the time.
Card punch. I think you're thinking of a coffee shop, eh?
Yes, I am. Avengers number 36 from Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by Fareed Karami. This is Jed McKay's final issue of the Avengers, his run. And in fact, the final issue of Avengers for a while, most likely, because this summer we are getting the Armageddon event, which is supposed to redefine the Avengers in the same sort of way Avengers Disassembled did all the way back at Avengers 500, probably leading into a new Avengers series sometime in the fall. I have some thoughts about Avengers as a franchise I could offer up in a second, but I'm curious to hear from you guys about this issue first.
I mean, reading this issue, this has like smash this team energy throughout. Like from the very beginning, it's like, well, I quit. I was like, what? It's like Captain Marvel's quitting. Everyone's like, I'm done doing this. I got other stuff to do. And I was like, oh, what a strange tone to strike here from the very start. So I do think this is the last of this team and perhaps this even type of team we're going to get. It feels like whatever this reset is going to be is going to be a new Avengers-style reboot where it's going to take like a pantheon of like popular characters and bring them together to become the Avengers. And so like that is good, I think. I think we're ready to do that. I'm sure it was exciting, especially for you, Alex, to say goodbye to the Twilight Court and the
Action
Combine.
When they flew off in Camelot, they're like, where are we going? To space, where we live. Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Have fun.
Good.
Say hi to the Ashen Combine for me.
Yeah.
I thought this was a nice send-off, you know, like a baseball issue or something where they're just kind of having fun. I like the idea that Carol would kind of meet with everybody and be like, hey, you know, this is what I'm thinking. Want to kind of gauge how you're feeling. I felt like there was real realism in that, like if you were on a team, you'd want the kind of, you know, head of the team to kind of pull you aside and kind of give you a chat and see how you're feeling and being like, okay, this is what I'm thinking. You know, how much does that screw up your plan? So I appreciated the time and energy that she took as the leader of the Avengers to kind of...
I agree with you so hard, Pete, except the just the tone of everyone. Like, T'Challa was like, yeah, I'm done with all this. I'm a king. I don't need this at
all. He's like,
I was pretty busy.
I don't know if
I was like, surely you must like this a little bit. We are fans of yours. Storm was like, yeah, I have this whole other thing going on, so I don't know, whatever you're doing over here. Like, everyone was so just over it. And I was like, what a weird idea to have everyone be beyond the Avengers. Something that I want to look up to.
So I wonder if this was part of the problem that I was having with this title, is they all felt like casual coworkers. Mm. Like, they didn't have a reason to be there. And I think even the conversation that Sam and Carol have in this issue, where they're like, well, we had all these problems we solved, and we didn't know at the beginning that was the thing we were solving, but that was, and now we're done. I'm like, all right, but I don't need to watch casual coworkers together in a title. I want to see that drama. I want to see emotion. I want to see some sort of connection. And that's not necessarily what we got here, which kind of segues in what I was going to say earlier. And I'm sure I've said this before on the show. I'm sure there's business reasons for this, but I find it mind-boggling that both from Marvel and DC, you don't have Avengers as the center of the Marvel Universe and Justice League is the center of the DC Universe. Like, they should be, in theory, the anchors of this thing. And instead, every single time in the modern era, like, they make gestures to it, but they always back away and move on. And it's crazy.
I agree with you. It's crazy that this title is going to go away for a while. On the DC side, that they're like, you know who we're featuring now? Firestorm. Dead Man. I'm like, what? Okay. I mean,
yeah, I don't mind the stories.
Me too. I think the stories are good.
That's not my point.
100%. But I'm just like, why are you backing away? This should be like this should be the brass ring for your creators to be like, get me on that title. I have an idea. And reading this, like, I agree with you, Alex. Like, I missed even just the moments in Jason Aaron's run where, like, She-Hulk was hooking up with Thor. I was like, those two people have a relationship. These people, I feel like, are like, hey, what's up? Hey, what's your name? I'm the one who does storms. And I'm like, okay, you guys know each other. And like, I mean, Carol meets with Scarlet Witch and she's like, yeah, I got a lot going on. She's like, me too. I'm quitting. And she's like, I quit so long ago. And I'm like, what? What? This is like being working in an office and where no one talks to each other.
Yeah, this is going to sound dismissive to Jed McKay. And I really 100% do not mean it as such. But I wonder if it needs like a strong, I know what I'm doing, I'm in charge personality at the top of my game selling titles like Jonathan Hickman or Brian Michael Bendis, who comes in there. They're like, Brian is like, yeah, I'm going to kill all the Avengers and make a new Avengers. What do you guys think about that? That's my pitch. And everybody's like, okay, it sounds good. You're going to sell a million copies.
Well, but I'm not saying it's a flaw in what Jed McKay did. It feels like a choice. It feels like this reminds me of actually a lot of Justice League runs where everyone is an icon and they're coming in and doing their stuff, but there isn't a lot of cohesion and chemistry on the team. And like, I really liked a lot of the Impossible City and all that stuff. I enjoyed that. I like the wild array of like villain teams that Jed's run was all about. Like, it was very like big and mythological. This issue just showed so much of what a lack of heat or like chemistry there was between these characters in here. And that felt like a choice that was just bearing this sort of strange final issue fruit.
I hear you. I just feel that, like, as far as finales go, you know, you kind of honor your run, wrap it up, and then kind of hand it over to the next person. And I thought it was an interesting idea to be like, hey, you know, let's sit in on all the exit interviews, you know, like, how do you dismantle the Avengers? Like, how does that work? And so it was kind of, you know, sometimes I don't want to be a fly on the wall, but, you know, to hear somebody break apart the Avengers, I was like, I'd love to sit in on this and see how this conversation goes. And I do think that, like, I agree with what you're saying, but if people were like, oh, fuck you, I want to be on the Avengers, it'd be hard to end. So having them be busy is kind of like a choice that's like, hey, we're kind of naturally, this is coming to an end. This is an organic ending. So I hear you. But I also think it was a well-executed idea.
All right.
One last thing to say. Yeah. Shouts to Wonder Man being at the absolute center of this cover. My guy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this man is featured not at all.
So that's funny that you're like, yeah, because this is very deceiving. If you're a Wonder Man fan, you're going to be like, oh, sick. He's going to be at the center of everything.
But yeah, this cover is awesome. You got Wonder Man. You have Moondragon strangely featured. Spider-Woman. Jarvis just like on the sneak tip.
I love Jarvis in the corner being like, I'm also here, Sam.
Yeah. in a full suit. I'm like, okay, man, take it easy. Is that your uniform? You got U.S. agent. Just a wild.
Yeah, and this is part of a like gatefold or fold out cover that's gone over the past couple of issues. I think it was Scott Koblish did it, but I'm probably wrong. This
it's really like lovely Koblish. Cover. I don't know if we ever talk about the covers, but yes, yeah. Very cool.
I wish we would. I wish somebody would let us know whether the covers are cool or
hey,
not.
Hey, this is a cool cover.
All right, a little too late. Buddy.
Sleeping hot? Waking up sweaty at 2 a.m.? It's not you. It's your sheets. And Care Aloha is your answer. They're the original for bamboo sheets that are naturally breathable, moisture-wicking, and luxuriously soft, designed to keep hot sleepers cool and comfortable all night long. You can feel the difference in how much cooler you sleep. Care Aloha's innovative bamboo fabric pulls heat away from your body so you fall asleep faster and stay asleep longer without cranking the AC. Improve your sleep tonight. Shop Care Aloha bamboo sheets now at carealoha.com. That's carealoha.com. Cooler sleep starts with Care Aloha.
Batman number 7 from DC Comics, written by Matt Fraction, art by Jorge Jimenez. We had Matt Fraction on the show a couple of weeks ago.
We did.
Talked about this very issue, which brings Batman face-to-face with the Joker, who has been chemically castrated, essentially, or mentally. So, Or has he? He's in a back-to-tank. He wants to warn his friend Batman about something. They have a little tête-à-tête in a safe room. I thought this was a great issue, just a nice conversation between Batman and Joker with Batman's sort of doctor girlfriend listening in, just very focused, really well done.
Yeah, I think this is like, I mean, one hell of a last panel. Yeah, I enjoyed the Batman Joker back and forth, and I also love that Batman was buying it. You know, and I'm like, what is the deal with therapists falling for this Joker guy, even in this vat? This therapist lady is like, I would do anything for him. But this was a blast of an issue. The art, the splash pages, the pull-out pages, the just really epic kind of Joker timeline and history and fun. So. Yeah, it seemed like Matt Fraction just said the artist, like, have at it. And it's what we got is just kind of magical. So I would definitely recommend buying this in the store just because the pullout and is going to be worth it.
Yes, the pullout is amazing. Check out our interview with Matt because he talks about how that's, like, hard to know when to try to ask for from your publisher and all that. Really interesting just behind-the-scenes stuff. But man, I love this issue. Like from just the art, like having Batman back in the blue and gray is so funny and so perfect for this particular comic, this issue. Because like my narrative, like the person I believe the most in this comic right now is the Joker. Like
what?
Batman's walking in.
You're
and
falling
being,
for this shit.
Here's the thing, though. Like,
dude.
Yes, and but. Like I really like the character that was introduced a couple issues back that Bruce has the date with, right? This is the same person, the doctor. Mm-hmm. And so like we have this thing where the doctor's like, hey, don't mess with the Joker. He's my patient. Mm-hmm. That means like he's an asshole. You're bad for trusting him. Yeah. I'm good. You have a weird lab with a lot of danger.
How about to take off the shoes before you go in? Like, really weird for me to see Batman's feet. Like, I was not okay with it.
It was great for me.
Yeah. check out Alex's bat
Alex,
feet.
Pull
only
up your
fans.
Pants when you're saying things like that.
No.
That's really nice.
How will you see my feet then?
My question on the Batman taking off his shoes moment. No socks. Mm-hmm. How bad do those boots stink?
So
that's
bad.
Disgusting.
His entire body stinks. He has
well,
sex on
have,
the rooftop.
What was he
going to
have bat socks on? Like you can't have them in socks. You know what I mean?
You're telling me? Have you ever worn boots without socks?
Yeah.
That he must smell like a dead horse. And I'm just saying that. Put that out there. And I think that's evocative. Like he's walking
do you
in
think
that.
His tagline should be that he strikes fear in the nose of criminals instead.
But I mean. If he's not wearing socks at all, it makes me think, is he wearing underwear? What's he got going on here? Is it just nude all the way down? Because that he stinks top to bottom.
I go commando.
I mean, they didn't show it, but like maybe he had socks on and he just took them off, man.
Would he hit him? He's hiding his socks? That's even weirder.
Yeah, there should have been a fold-out of him balling up his socks.
You don't think he's got a little thing on his utility belt to put socks, bro?
Pete, I love that you're defending Batman. You're like, he's got socks. He's not gross. Yeah, I promise you, my man has socks.
Do you think his socks have little bats on them? Like they're yellow socks with little black bat symbols?
Yeah, maybe like the ones before it's time to do laundry, so Alfred knows. Like, oh, God.
I would love to see Batman pull his boots off. He's wearing mismatched dress socks, different patterns on. He's like, sorry, laundry. It's been weird since Alfred died. I don't know what I'm doing.
I would love if he took the socks that had pictures of him and Alfred on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you have socks with you and your dad on them, on yours?
I got pictures with you and that guy on there.
That
socks?
Guy being Alex? Yes, yes, I know that.
Yes.
Who's the dad and who's the kid? Nobody knows. Anyway, that's one. We just talked about one panel for 3 to 4 minutes. But I do love this. And I think Batman is being sort of a dick. And he is punished by the end of the issue for being that way. I like the way, just you're riding with Joker, I feel like, in this story. That's so hard to do.
What are you talking about, riding with
Joker? The way the story
unfolds,
he's like, look, here's who I am.
I'm falling for it.
But he's like, I'm capable of doing what you think I'm doing, but I'm not doing it. I'm beyond that right now. And I think it's right now. Yeah, sure, of course. You're like Batman. But Batman standing in a brightly lit lab wearing blue and gray spandex, in a cape that the lady's like, hey, your capes,
no
don't let
shoes.
Your cape get you electrocuted. He's the one who seems out of place. And I think that's super smart and intentional from Matt Fraction. I love this run. Each issue feels like such a narrative chunk. It feels like such a meal. And that's so exciting in a comic to get, because each of the last 3 issues have been so different.
Yeah.
Still building toward this larger super story. The reveal at the end of this issue is so good and so big. Like, this is just building to such an epic run.
I love the last page, too. The one thing I wanted to say about it without spoiling anything that I thought was very funny is Batman has 3 little red surprise lines over his head, like he's a cartoon, which, given the gravity of what happens in that last page, I just thought was a funny little juxtaposition. That's all. Why don't we move on and talk about our next book, which is Sleep, number 8 from Image Comics by Xander Cannon. This is the final issue of this series that I think we all have been loving quite a bit, about a guy who probably turns into a monster every time he falls asleep and has been decimating a small town. It has been innovative, inventive, and gorgeously drawn every issue. It all comes down to this. What'd you guys think about this last issue?
Well, I'll tell you what. I did not see this coming.
Yeah.
It's a wild issue from a story perspective, but I felt like the art was elevated even higher in this issue. Like, the design on sort of the monster and the man inside the monster, I thought was so smart. I've never seen anything quite like this before that I thought was really cool.
I agree with you. I was, after a story that hasn't necessarily been straightforward, but certainly seems like it has been leaning in directions that I understand or am striving to understand, this was hard to hold on to story-wise, plot-wise. It was a little tough to figure out exactly what was going on or how this connects to the previous 7 issues of the run. I still found it very intriguing and gorgeous to look at, but like you said, surprising, weird end to this book.
Well, and like it felt like it was telling the story. Sorry, Pete, telling a story of new characters, right? Characters that we didn't really know about. And so this was just if I can, not to be guessing about this at this point as we're reviewing it, but like it felt like this was an observation about how this town is so corrupt that he's not the monster, that the people are the monster here.
Yeah.
It felt like what it was. And I was like, oh, so strange. Cause that wasn't so much of this whole series was like, he's a monster. What does it feel like to be a monster that doesn't want to be a monster? And it felt like it was dealing with like anxiety, regret, guilt, and those things. And this flipped to something totally different in the final issue, which I feel like you just never see.
Yeah. I mean, I was expecting and wanting the one reveal, and then we got kind of like a big swing and a different kind of reveal as well. So it was kind of a double reveal in this issue, and I was kind of like, holy shit, this is really twisting and turning in ways that I wasn't ready for or expecting. So, yeah, trigger warning for this thing, but yeah, it was, I don't know, man. I was having a great time. I was like, just kind of let me see the other side of it. And we got that, so I was super happy. But then, like, something else happened, and I was like, what the fuck? So, interesting. Really grabs you. Doesn't let you go. And but, man, it...
Alex, you've been the biggest fan of this. Mm-hmm. How did you feel about this? Was it...
I would be very curious to go back and read it again, because I know you're saying, and this is certainly my feeling, that, like, have we met any of these characters before that we meet in this issue? And I would guess that we probably have, because I do disagree that, like, there's definitely been, there is darkness and weirdness in this town while this main character is grappling with his own humanity or lack of humanity. So I do wonder if there are things been bubbling in the background that I don't necessarily remember, because this came out over a year plus. I don't remember exactly how long it came out for. But yeah, I don't know. It felt like it turned the focus off of him and what ultimately had with him. It doesn't give any easy answers, but I do think it's well worth reading regardless, even if it's not necessarily a satisfying last issue.
It's just different. Like, what I expected in this was going to be, we were finally going to see just the monster, and we were going to see him doing stuff, and then maybe, like, the end of it was going to be where his humanity comes and the monster stops from killing his friend or something. This friend that we've met, who was, like, sort of working for the government agency. So, like, I thought that's where we were headed, and this is, like, another way to redeem the monster is to create a more mundane, worse, everyday monster. And I think that's what is done here. But that left me sort of like, oh, good, but oh no. Yeah. Oh no, everything's bad.
I think artistically, though, it's worth checking out for that alone, because just the use of color, just the use of storytelling, the white, you thought like the red was the evil, but it turns out like the white stripe was also talking about evil. So, like, you know, just really the use of color and storytelling was just, you know, really impressive. As an artist, you should check this out, just because it's such a cool way to pull focus, to pull your eye, to make you kind of look at things differently. So artistically, really impressive. Yeah,
I wonder if the takeaway here, and I know we're not giving any specifics about this book, because I do think it's worth reading and kind of deciding for yourself, but I wonder if the takeaway here is, like, most of the book is about, we all feel like we're good people, but we all have evil inside. How do you grapple with that in a world people? And the ultimate conclusion is, like, well, actually, the whole world's bad. So, period. And that's upsetting to hear, but maybe also true from a certain perspective. So I don't know. Worth reading again, I think. Moonstar, number one from Marvel, written by Ashley Allen, art by Eduardo Audino. Ashley Allen had previously written Moonstar in the Magic title. That was so good, and we liked quite a bit.
Yes.
Now Moonstar is spinning out into her own adventure that ties very heavily into her past as a Valkyrie. I thought this kicked ass. What did you guys think?
Yeah, also cool cover that's got here.
Yeah, I agree. I really enjoyed this. It's especially hard to do something that is relying on a lot of continuity that, you know, we know because we read this pretty hardcore every week and minute of our lives. But, like, you have to know some deep Danny Moonstar history, as well as you sort of must have read the Magic series to get caught up with what she's been doing lately. So it was definitely helpful to know all of that. But I just really like, we really get to know Danny in this comic. And this the writing is so with her that it pulls you in no matter how, if you don't know about the stuff I was just mentioning. And she's just an exciting character. She's a powerful Marvel character that we is rarely featured, so I'm excited that this is happening.
Yeah, I agree. I was a little surprised how in continuity for like a number one, you would think it would just be kind of like a reset for the character or origin or whatever. So I was surprised with all the other stuff going on. And I love the kind of evil sword story and all that kind of stuff that they were laying on there. And the art was fantastic and very interesting kind of setup. So I'm excited for what's to come.
I think an evil sword, though.
Yeah. Well, I will say, to sort of bring both of your comments together, I thought the first half of the issue was very heavy on exposition. Like, it was a lot to get through and a lot laid out there. But once Danny gets together with these two other, like, Norse mystical dudes and is fighting an evil Norseman with a giant sword who eats ghosts, I was like, this is cool.
This is fun. Yeah.
Yeah, this is good. So there's a big off-ramp at the front half of the book, but once it gets past that exposition and set up, that's the part that I think really kicks ass. Yeah. So I'm excited to see what's next. Next up, Absolute Flash, number 12 from DC Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Nick Robles and A.L. Kaplan. It was the final issue of this arc, though the series is continuing as Wally battles Eobard Thawne, who is a gigantic monster in Fort Fox, leading to a new status quo. And spoiler warning, because I wanted to talk about this because this was the first thing I talked about. Pete, you've been very suspicious of adorable tiny little Grodd this entire time. How'd you feel about the fact that adorable tiny little Grodd is actually just adorable and his dad is the Grodd who's bad?
That was such a fucking... I was like, yo, man, you fuckers. Like, every couple of panels, you would put a little adorable Grodd there and I'm like, oh, I can't trust it. Can't trust it. And then it was just like, I wanted a better payoff than that.
What are you talking about? You found out that he is good and he just loves his daddy, who is evil.
What's wrong with that?
I guess that's one way to go with it.
Pete, have you been suspicious of Punch the Monkey, the internet sensation? You're suspicious of that monkey.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are you worried about? You think he, like, baby King Kong, or he's up to something?
I'm worried. I too love bananas and peanuts and stuff like that. So, like, you know, don't cover my stuff. You know what I mean?
Wait a second. Are you saying, like this monkey, you love bananas and peanuts? Yeah. And you're worried that the monkeys are coming for your stuff?
Yeah, exactly. They're coming for my stuff.
Your bananas and peanuts. So this is a message. You're putting a message out to the monkeys right now.
No, I am not. I'm not saying that I have a stash of bananas and peanuts and that.
You are saying you have a stash of bananas and peanuts.
And I do want to warn you, I don't know how often you look at our audience demographics for the podcast, but it is 50% monkeys.
Yes, we have a lot of fans in the chimpanzee world. Well, a lot of zoos.
And this is a great chance to mention patreon.com/comicbookclub. If you are a monkey and you listen to the show, we have $5 and up. It's a lion-free tier. Lions will not attack you if you give us $5.
Oh, wow.
Feel free to subscribe.
And that's at the $25 tier, you will have access to all of Pete's peanuts in them.
The Pete stash level.
Peanuts. How many peanuts you sitting on, my
dude,
guy?
Dude, I love peanuts, man. It's a lot
more.
You ever
be to a bar with, like, peanut shells? That's basically Pete's house.
Oh, yeah. That's, yeah. All over exactly. The
floor. That's Pete's house.
Yeah. Shells on the floor, baby.
Pete lives in a banana tree.
I am enjoying this Flash story. I felt like Jeff Lemire did a great job with this. Flash is not one of my favorite characters, but I did enjoy this. I was a little upset that the Grodd wasn't going to then turn into the Grodd that we know and fear. But they got me on that one.
Yes. For a man who loves King Kong, you're really suspicious of this little cutie little Grodd monkey. Yeah. I also really like this. I thought the emotional resonance here I thought really worked, and I feel like it gets me excited for the second year of this. We get end of year one here, but it's going to be building toward the next big emotional reveal on this, and it'll be a much more focused enterprise, I feel like, going forward, which will be exciting.
Next up, Narco, number one from Image Comics, written by Doug Wagner, art by Dave Hilliard. And if I had a nickel for every time Image Comics published a comic book about a guy who falls asleep and gets accused of killing people, I'd have two nickels, which is not a lot, but it's weird it's happened twice. Anyway, this comes from the team who did vinyl and plastic and plush, I want to say, as well as I Was a Fashion School Serial Killer, which I liked quite a bit. This is more in line with that last one a little bit, at least now, though the team has a tendency to go off the rails. Like I said, it's about a guy, well, kind of intimated. It's about a guy who has narcolepsy, you know, has a big crush on the girl who lives next door to him, and by the end of the issue may have watched her get horribly murdered.
Well, this, you know, this is kind of like a sleep scenario where we don't know the comic book sleep that we were just talking about. Where we don't know what's happening.
You mean in Go to Sleep.
So it could be that he's going to sleep, but he also could be turning into a giant bug monster, and we don't know. You know what I mean? So you got to kind of hold back on that a little bit there, the Zelbatron. I thought this was a really, first off, intense cover. But that last panel was almost a bit much where I'm like, well, seemed like the person I was pulling for just died, so I probably shouldn't pick up the next issue since they're dead.
You were pulling for their relationship.
Yeah, I love a good will they, won't they story, and if you're just going to kill off one of those characters.
Won't they? I think won't they.
Yeah, so that's a tough one to kind of then want to go back for if you're like, well, my favorite character's dead.
Well, maybe then the issue will, this is called Narco, but maybe really Necro, and he'll like hook up with the dead body.
Oh my God.
And then Necro. I don't know what that means, but
a lot of potential there. I really enjoyed this. I feel like this book really threw you in, like Narco being the only clue about sort of what's happening with him. And then we just like, he's just a kid who is like trying to meet up with this girl he likes. He has some friends, and if his heart rate gets too high, he fully passes out. And they let the story happen. I thought it was a great little mystery at the end there, and really using just the comic book medium, like we just get a sort of bubbly, blurry look at maybe the killer, maybe it's the victim. We don't know anything about what's happening, but I'm very drawn in by this.
Yeah, to be clear, I really like this team. They do have a tendency to go absolutely insane off the rails. We'll see what they do here, but I'll pretty much follow them anywhere. I really like the style that they work in. It's arch, it's funny, it's different every time out of the gate. Amazing Spider-Man, number 23 from Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by Ed McGuinness. This is the second part of the Death Spiral storyline as Torment, a new character, is coming after Peter Parker and Eddie Brock and Mary Jane by killing all of their family line all the way down to them. Carnage is manipulating things in the background, unbeknownst to Eddie Brock, who is his current host. And also, Mary Jane thought she told Peter that she was Venom, but she actually told Ben Reilly. And this issue, Peter finally finds out, and it is a whole thing that Pete is clapping for because they talked. They talked.
Yeah. Let's just take a moment. Okay, let's just take a moment. You got MJ and Peter on the cover here together. What a great window.
Punching each other just like we always wanted.
You know, they are covered in venom goop and ready to fight.
They're not fighting each other. I just think that...
What are you talking about?
They were not getting along.
They talked. They had a heart-to-heart, and I'm excited. I mean, this is really exciting. What this means, the ramifications of this talk, what this means for these two huge characters moving together forward, maybe. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. This is just very exciting. They're finally talking to each other. What an exciting time to be alive.
It's so funny you think that, because that's what I wanted out of this. I wanted them to have that moment of like, oh, look, you're back. Oh, my God, you went through so much. You're going through so much. We're both so mixed up in this Spider-Man stuff, and have a little bit of chemistry, heat. I like younger Pete LePage. I want this romance to start now. It's time. It's time for this to start, I think. And in this issue, they are not getting along. They are sort of fighting, and Mary Jane is like, ugh, you're annoying. Your life's annoying. And you don't understand my life at all. Like, they are fighting like people who have been dating, but we're not getting the pleasure of the romance side of it. And I feel like that's what I want here. I think the horror of this is great. I like the larger story. And honestly, I like this story. I'm yearning for some positive connection between
people. Same. And I feel like, you know, a lot of the times in rom-coms, the two main characters start off fighting. You know, they're not getting along. They seem like opposites, and, you know, how could they ever work together? But
well, actually, that's true in a lot of people who get divorced and then never speak again.
I really like this comic book, and I really like this crossover so far. I thought the first issue, the one shot, was great. I thought this was great as well. Torment seems to be actually a really interesting and terrifying villain. Very excited to see what happens with him. I agree with you that the conversation between Peter and MJ was the highlight of the issue, but I don't want to downplay Venom also being there, which is very funny.
It was funny.
The way that... did I say Jed McKay? I meant Joe Kelly. I'm so sorry. I wrote that down wrong.
Now,
Joe Kelly wrote that was so funny, just them having the conversation. You forget that Venom also loves Peter and wants to be with Peter, so him putting his hand on him and being like, I'm also here touching
you. Honestly, there was more chemistry between Venom and Peter than MJ and Peter. And I was like, how is this
we're going? I'll take it if that's what it's going to be.
It's all great. I am all in on this. Also, RIP to a classic Spider-Man villain this issue, which... That is the only thing that gave me a little pause. That's sort of a tired trope to be like, you see this new villain? He's so badass, he killed this old villain. What do you think about that? And I'm like, all right, it's fine. You don't need to do that. We know that he's been killing everybody's aunts and cousins, so it's cool.
Let me ask you, though. Are you rooting for this relationship? Like, do you think maybe this is the start of something, or is that not...
Torment to the Shocker? Is that who you're talking about?
Pete's self-soothing, Alex. He needs an answer.
Do you think there's any...
I don't know. I think it's going to work out with Peter and Shay. Like, they have so much in common. For example, she has a face, he has a face. They both have first names. I'm not sure about the last names thing, but I know Peter has the last name Parker. Not sure about Shay, but... I don't know. We'll see. I think they really got something there. Poison Ivy, number 42 for DC Comics.
It's me, Mephisto. I'll bring Aunt May back to life if you'll leave Shay. Who? What?
Huh?
Kill Shay. Kill her.
Poison Ivy, number 42 from DC Comics, written by G. Willow Wilson, art by Marcio Takara. This is a very surprising issue because last issue we got Poison Ivy being like, maybe I'll run for mayor of Gotham City. And this issue, she's mayor. We skipped the whole election. We're right in it. You know, getting back to what we were saying about DCKO, I think this is part of Act 2 of DC All In. And I think if anything, the change that happened was not a reboot. It was just like, let's skip ahead to the good stuff. Like, why bother with the whole Ivy running for mayor election storyline when we could just get to it and do it? And it is really interesting. Ivy got what she wanted. She's off her game. She's dealing with Vandal Savage. I thought this was a really cool issue of this book.
I agree with you. I love the time dash. I love that we get the reveal at the end, which I will spoil right now, is that she and Harley broke up, which I thought was just a great, great punch. Great exclamation point at the end of the issue. And it also seems like she's sort of with Janet from HR is referred to as her partner or lover at a point. And I'm like, I was like, oh, sort of. But then I'm like, oh, are we about to get that? And like, that's something as someone who's been reading this since the jump, I'm like, that relationship in this comic anyway has the juice. So I'm very curious to see what we're going to see happen there. And then we just get Poison Ivy just trying to be mayor while also being visited by Fungus God, dealing with magic assistant. Like, it's all really fun. We jumped, like you said, Alex, we jumped to the fun part.
I don't know if we jump to the fun part. This was
Pete loves political campaigns, so he's missing the mail.
Yeah, yeah. I love, you know, you got to get out there, shake some hands, kiss some babies. I just think that what's upsetting to me as someone who has a ship in this race here is that Poison Ivy and Harley were together. Then all of a sudden, Karen from HR fucked that whole thing up. And we watched as Poison Ivy was like, yeah, fuck Harley Quinn. I'm going to get with this. And it was like, okay, but why? And then in this issue, we reveal that she's like, oh, I think I made the wrong choice by choosing HR over Ivy and over Harley. And I'm like, yeah, I could have told you that a while ago. So it's upsetting that, like, we fast-forwarded deep into this timeline that I don't want to be in.
Pete, as someone who understands HR, do you feel you don't feel any connection to Janet?
Yeah, I mean, that is correct, and that is correct. I have no feelings.
What a corporate email style answer.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, why don't we move on and talk about Lands Unknown, The Skinless Man, number one from Dark Horse Comics by Ben Stenbeck. This is, per the name, part of the Lands Unknown, which is a new universe created by Mike Mignola and Ben Stenbeck that has absolutely nothing to do with their Hellboy universe. It's entirely separate and entirely fresh and entirely different. It's not the sort of book that you would find associated with Hellboy or any of those characters at all. No. Instead, it's about a skinless man on a quest, or rather a man who meets a witch and is told a story about a skinless man who is on a quest, which, again, I want to be very clear, you would never see from Mike Mignola and or Ben Stenbeck in any of the Hellboy books. Go ahead.
You like this. Come on, yeah, dude. This was awesome. I really thought this was a cool, crazy tale. Loved all the action, amazing art. Yeah, one hell of a first issue. I cannot wait to read more. I thought it was a fun kind of twist of the witch kind of being like, you know, I'm telling the story of this skinless man. So, yeah, I don't know. I thought this was
which
a blast.
Which skinless man would you like to hear a story about?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, boy, great question.
I don't trust babies with the eyes of gold. I'll tell you that much.
Oh, man, I love a golden-eyed baby.
Really? I would just kind of like push that basket farther down the river if that came across me, you know what I mean?
Here's my question for you, though, Pete. I'm surprised you like this so much, because don't you feel like the skin is the best part, like the good crispy skin, you know? Like, you love peeling that off, eating that.
Sure do. Yeah, nice and crispy and crunchy.
You weren't missing it when you were reading this book?
I wasn't. I thought it was a fun choice. Yeah, I hear you with what you were saying at the beginning, but sometimes you know, a good story is a good story, so I was just enjoying
it. No, yes, and I'm being very sarcastic. It's fine. It's just funny to me that they're like, check out our new universe. And I'm like, I don't know, this is a lot like the old universe.
Please just make Hellboy again.
It's fine. They can make something new. They're clearly very excited about this. It is a gorgeous book. Like, Ben Stenbeck draws some really beautiful creatures throughout this book, and this skinless man looks cool. But you kind of know what you're getting into.
Do you think that we're going to field a lot of calls from the skinless man's dermatologist?
Oh, man. I hope
like, I haven't heard from you. I haven't heard from you in a while.
Yeah.
Nobody Everything else was okay? skeeved out by the golden baby?
No, the golden baby was pretty creepy. But very also valuable. There was the Hellboy book, Carmen Redclaw, that also has a creepy baby. So, again, I was like, I don't know.
I mean, creepy babies are a thing.
I felt very seen by the adventurers, which is a man with a gray beard, talking wolf, and a talking rabbit.
Oh.
I felt like that's
the three of us?
Yeah.
Dibs on the rabbit.
No, you're the gray bearded one.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Wait, what were the other two? The rabbit and the wolf?
Talking rabbit, wolf. Talking like wolf. Wolf
can I be
line.
The rabbit?
Sure. You can be. Yes, of course. You can be
Thank
that.
Thank you.
Come on, man.
Why don't we talk about X-Men Annual number one from Marvel, written by Ryan Stegman, art by Steve Scroce, Sanford Green, and Ryan Stegman. This is a absolutely wild book that ties into Uncanny X-Men. That's the New Orleans X-Men that Gail Simone usually writes. Jean Grey, Phoenix, comes back to Earth because there is a mutant who has reemerged. I believe he's called the Creationist, who has the ability to create everything he can imagine, but he doesn't have a lot of imagination, so he is kidnapped Ryan Stegman and Sanford Green and is using their brain to create monsters. And you get to see their art integrated with each other. It is very winky about them being in the book. I thought this was an awesome issue. I loved it.
Yeah, and it's very, I mean, I hate to just say what the metaphor is. In my estimation, it's AI.
100%.
But I really I thought it was going to be a little harsher on our creationist character. But at the end of the day, he's the mutant, and they're like, all mutants are accepted. He's like, I'm ready to learn. And I thought that was such an interesting takeaway from a story that is, like, going so hard at the reality connection point to be like, maybe we just need to teach people who think AI is the way to create things from now on that it's not the way, that you have to use your brain, not just say nine words into your, type nine words into your AI image generator.
Here's the thing. I love Sanford Green. I love these artists and these writers on this book. The person making the cartoon move is just, or making the panel of the comic book. The Roger Rabbit, we've seen it done so many times, so it's hard to be like, oh, wow, But I did love the kind of art, and it was kind of fun to see Wolverine kind of pop out and squeeze through.
I hear you, but I thought it was beautifully done, and to the point that Justin was making, I also thought it was very empathetic and very kind. This is a good Jean Grey story. We haven't seen her character like this in a really long time. And having her come in and just slowly talk this guy down, it felt very true to the X-Men in a way that also we haven't been really getting from the X-Men books lately.
Yeah, and honestly, it made me like, what is the Phoenix's place in the X-Men right now? It feels strange. Throughout the last, 6 months, Jean Grey's just been in space. She had a book where she was dealing with some stuff that felt just very not connected to anything else happening in the X universe. So I hope they find a place for her. She's such an important character, yet she seems, I feel like everyone's like, what do you do with the Phoenix? She's too powerful. And it's like, well, then change that. Let's change that or figure it out.
All right, here's another character who might be too powerful. Absolute Superman, number 17 from DC Comics, written by Jason Aaron, art by Juan Ferreira. Superman has been tangling with the Hawkman of the Absolute Universe when in walks Parasite, attacking Metropolis and consuming everything around him or it, depending on how you look at it. And Superman decides to take it on, but it's all a distraction to free Ra's al Ghul from prison. Does he want to go? I guess we'll find out by the end of the issue. Justin, you're a big fan of this title. What'd you think about this one?
I like it. I think we get the art on this by Juan Ferreira is wild. Like, we get some real visceral Parasite stuff happening here, which I think is really cool. The Ra's al Ghul stuff is the part that I was sort of the most intrigued about. I really like the way that this character was left and sort of felt reformed a bit. And then that's sort of referenced in here. Like, he's taken out of his prison cell by Talia. And he's like, I don't want to go. I'm different now. And she's like, nope. Gonna juice you back up with some Lazarus stuff. And I'm curious how that's going to play out. I still really like this book. We get some Lex Luthor stuff happening here that is, like, pretty intensely horrifying.
Yeah.
Just sort of out of nowhere, which I thought was also pushing this story forward. This series goes hard all the time in different directions that I feel like you don't see coming.
Yeah, I thought this was really cool. I liked how Superman, like, really listened and made smart decisions in this comic about the alien. And, it was funny how Al Ghul was just kind of like, hey, dude, I just got to a quiet room where I can just kind of read and be by myself. Like, really try not to fuck up that vibe right now. So, kind of interesting take.
I also really like this issue. This is the first issue, and I think very purposefully so, that Superman is Superman, like to the point that he's like,
yes,
I'm Superman at one point of this issue. And that's nice to see. You know, this arc has been called The Never Ending Begins, and that's what Jason Aaron has been holding back on. He's slowly been building him up to this place where he is Superman and he can inspire people, and he also believes in himself at the same time. I know I said this with DCKO as well, but it's always nice to see it. It's refreshing, particularly in the Absolute Universe.
And it's done sort of in two ways in this issue. Like, we see, like, a young, in the Parasite sort of mindscape, Superman is, like, a kid. Like, you see him as, like, it looks like a 10-year-old. And I thought that was cool. He's young and sort of, like, pure. And then we also get him, for the first time, being purely confident and purely, like, you said, Alex, like, I'm Superman. I got this. And I was like, oh, man, that's a breathtaking moment, I think, in this story that we're getting, you know, 17 issues in.
Yeah.
Radiant Black, number 40 from Image Comics, written by Kyle Higgins and Joe Clark, art by Marcelo Costa and Paul Daniel Santos. This issue, Radiant Black gets his butt kicked, and there's only two, well, an old ally and an old enemy who might be able to save him by the end. What'd you guys think about this one?
This was great. Fun last panel callback. You know, this fucking guy, just fun, amazing art. This continues to be amazing. The world building. This is top shelf comics. I'm constantly impressed by this comic. It's hard to come up with new ways to talk about how great this is.
This comic has really gotten into the, like, Invincible, like, middle to late part of the run of Invincible, where it's like, we're going to push these pieces down the board.
You're talking about punching through faces, Invincible? Is that where it's at?
That sort of like late period where there's so many storylines happening. And it was just like, let's move them all down the line a little bit. And I feel like that's where Radiant Black is. Like, everything is progressing forward, but I can't tell what part of the story we're in. I can't tell if he's about to go save his girlfriend that's been captured, or he's about to like be on a whole nother adventure because he got beat up too badly. Like, so it's sort of a wild narrative structure that reminds me of the Invincible thing that I was just saying, because anything can happen, which is exciting, but also I don't know when to get excited.
Yeah, I was curious to do a little bit of a heat check with this issue, because like Pete is saying, every issue is good, but like you're saying, Justin, I'm not quite sure where we're going at this point. I was really intrigued after the Catalyst War, and now feels like there's a lot of dudes in face masks running around. So maybe it's just this issue, but...
And they keep bumping into each other in a way where I'm like, is this good or bad or what? And, like, I'm confident all questions will be answered, but I just don't know when or how.
X-Men 26 from Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by Netho Diaz. The X-Men, I thought we're still on the path of revelation, but maybe not. That doesn't seem to be what's happening this issue. Instead, they are tracking down some other stuff, and they end up in the first part of a 5-part Danger Room arc. But basically, they're all over the place dealing with various threats all at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening. That's what's going on.
Now on to weather. In your neck of the woods. Cyclops doing a shitty job, can't hold his team together, people want to leave, and he's like, all right. You know, it was cool that he let him go and then had other people go with him, so that was at least nice of him to give him a little bit of props. Fun twists and turns, great art, interesting story. I really think that, those quote-unquote nice townsfolk killed Glob, so that'll be interesting to see.
Wow. The Netho Diaz art, I'm like sort of sometimes like, oh, this is fine. And then sometimes I'm like, oh, that's a great page. There's a page in here where Juggernaut, Beast, Magic, and Cyclops are like getting ready for a fight. And I was like, that's an amazing page. And others where I'm like, I don't know if I like this. And I feel that way about the story as well, where I'm like, Glob is sort of just selling vegetables in town. And I'm like, this is the part of the story I like, because at least he's just doing something. Yeah. When like so much of in this title specifically, Cyclops is unhappy and in a bad mood and everything sucks. And I just want something good here. Like, I want them to be working towards something that feels good rather than being like, this shit again? I'm like, guys, we've done this.
This might not be totally 100% on the money, but I definitely think Gail Simone's Uncanny X-Men is very clearly inspired by Chris Claremont.
Yes.
This X-Men book by Jen McKay might be like Rob Liefeld. Like, I feel like maybe it would work better if everybody had that... Yeah, sort of rectangular shouting face, and you couldn't see their toes, and they all had enormous jacked up guns the entire time.
That's really funny you say that, because even the Neto Diaz art feels like those last like dozen issues of New Mutants into X-Force number one back in the 90s. Like, we were getting into Executioner's Song, and it was just like, everything sucks, they're under constant attack. No one really talks to each other, because they're just like, I don't know, they're trying to kill us now, and it's just... It was so intense, but I want to like these characters and like that they're having something happen.
Well, and that's why the Glob thing is fun, because he's a fun character, and he has this arc of being like, ooh, I'm just going to try to sell some vegetables. Are these people going to be mean to me? And then they're like, you know what? We like vegetables.
Yeah.
And then something terrible happens, of course, but for most of the arc, it's like, this is cute. This is funny. All right, well, we'll see how this goes. The Nice House by the Sea, number 8 from DC Comics, written by James Tynion IV, art by Alvaro Martinez Bueno. I mean, based on what we just talked about, this has to be nice, right? Like, people being nice to each other in a house.
By the sea? Oh, what a lovely space. A breeze coming in?
Yes. No, just kidding. There's the Nice House by the Sea is trying to kill everybody in the Nice House by the Lake. And, of course, two aliens, are the only people who could stop them. There's a bunch of body horror going on this issue and a lot of attacks. Justin, I will go to you first again for this one. Take it away.
Sea versus Lake. Who wins, guys?
Oh, man.
Because here's the thing. Sea people are a little more seasoned. They're a little harsher. Lake people, they soft. So, and I like in
hold
this
on,
issue.
Hold on, you've gotten your 20 second. I want to hear from Pete. Defend Lakes, please.
All right, yeah, dude. First off, like, sea people are soft, man. You know what I mean? You got to be harder to live around a lake, bro. You know what I mean? You got to
work. What are you talking about? You don't even have waves.
You don't normally do this in a debate, but can you not just repeat what he said and give maybe some details about how lake people are harder?
Lakes don't even have waves. It's just like being around a puddle.
Oh,
the sea is deadly, dangerous, full of animals.
Nope.
Lake is like a lovely bath, a nostalgia bath, if you will.
Ooh.
Yeah. I Justin, Pete did just say nope. Do you have a response to that?
It's hard to weigh in on this, the great debate that we've been working toward for so long. This comic had a gear shift last issue, where we got the idea that like, oh yes, it's time to kill and fight from these people who don't, a trap was sprung, and we're getting to see that payoff here, which is really exciting. There are so many characters in this book, and even the story knows that, because they're like, half of them must die. It's like, okay.
When I got to that, I was like, okay, that sounds good, because I was having a hard enough time keeping track of the characters around the lake when there were only 7 of them or whatever. Now that there are 14 running around, I'm like, please, please kill off half of these characters. I would love that, because I like this book, but every issue they're like, here's our new point of view character. You know who this is. And I'm like, I do not. This is one of James Tynion IV's friends that he's written into this book. I am not friends with these people. I don't know these people. Please introduce me to them a little bit better.
But I will say something's emerged, I think, in these last couple issues where there is like a philosophy difference. And I feel like the idea here is you're not meant to know each of the individuals, because there are so many of them. But you're meant to see, it's like, there's these people who are close, authentic, and just regular people, and these people that are a little more iconic, and they're the sea people. They're icons that Max selected, and who wins in that fight? And it's going to be a mix at the end of the day, but I feel like the lake people will emerge sort of the main winners. Because
lake people, motherfucker.
I'm a lake. Let me be honest. I'm a lake person. Yeah, I'm just saying. But sea people are meaner, I think. You ever gone to this beach? Everyone's an asshole.
I do want to talk about the art on this book. This comic is too scary for me, but the art is absolutely phenomenal. The use of colors, the shading, the shadowing, it's scary as fuck, but impressive.
Why do you say too scary, Pete? Because actually not a lot of violence happens. What's scary? Just the vibe?
The vibe is scary. The nightmare kind of body horror kind of, yeah, it's all pretty dark and twisted, man.
Sea too big? Sea too big?
Too big.
Fan
too
sea?
Fantasy.
Wow, deep cut.
All right, Godzilla number 8 from IDW, written by Tim Seeley.
We finally made it here. All right,
nothing wrong here.
Hendry Prasetya. We have been following this character Jason, who killed Godzilla, but actually absorbed Godzilla, probably, and now can turn into a gigantic energy Godzilla. He is locked away this issue as a bunch of other kaiju stuff is going wrong in the world. Pete, you're freaking out. Take it away.
Oh, man. It's almost like Tim Seals listens. He's like, oh, yeah, Pete, you don't like to care about the humans? What if I put Godzilla in a human? Then you would have to care. So, yeah, I'm in this little inception here in this Godzilla comic, and I'm loving it. Also, very cool. The first page is a Godzilla trading card. Collect them all. Yeah, fun.
Cut it out.
Can I ask you a question, Pete? Because I know very well, we've talked about this a lot, that you fast forward through the human stuff in Godzilla movies so you can get to the giant monster fights.
Right.
And let's say, imagine for a moment, there's your run-of-the-mill Godzilla movie, right? It's the same exact plot, same exact shots, everything is exactly the same, except the humans are all little kaiju, and the kaiju are like giant naked men who are fighting. How do you interact with this? Are you now watching the whole thing because it's little kaiju standing around in their lab coats being like,
I don't know. But then you made them naked. And now I'm just like, I'm not sure.
Are the kaiju wearing clothes?
I don't know.
Is Godzilla wearing pants? I don't think so, Pete. He's not Fig Fang Foom.
Alex has been working on this screenplay for like quite some time, Pete. Yeah, so just be careful with this here.
It's called Godzilla's Shins.
Oh boy.
Good.
Because you can see him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, JT says you got to be excited because you get it a little bit inside Godzilla's head, you know.
It's funny you say that. That was going to be my point. I was like, when I first read this and I heard this Godzilla narration, I was like, that's all you got to say, bro? I was like,
it's the first time
finally,
we get to hear him. Yeah.
We're finally hearing Godzilla talk. He's like, hey, I'm Godzilla. I was like, say something. Give me a little. Like, I hate
buildings. What did you
buildings.
Want him to say? Be like, Mothra's my dog? Like, what?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm going to say. Like, or like, man, buildings bother me. Or like, I could eat a boat for breakfast. My version of going to a subway is going to a naval shipyard. Like, that's the kind of stuff I want Godzilla to say.
I was hoping to be more like, I agree with Hulk. Like, I hate helicopters. You know what I mean?
Oh, you think he and Hulk, like, text?
Hulk hates helicopters?
Yeah, he hates whirly birds. Yeah.
Okay. I think that's because helicopters.
All right, that's just a very not the first thing I would think about when I think about the Hulk, but I
Hulk. That guy hates helicopters. Number one fact about the Hulk.
I'm thinking about getting into Hulk comics. What do I need to know? Well, first of all,
much like Mr. T, he hates helicopters. Yeah. So, okay, I feel like I get where Pete's coming up with this stuff.
Mr. T hates flying.
Why don't we move on and talk about Touched by a Demon number 2 from Dark Horse Comics by Kristen Gudsnuck. This is about a bunch of demons, or two demons actually, who decide to open a self-help shop on Earth because they want to try to become angels again. Last issue, they tried to help out this girl who was having a bad time with her family and accidentally, by the end of this issue, ended up not particularly, but she did it anyway. This girl killed her entire family. This issue, they try to figure out what to do with that and hire her and also try to help another bunch of other people, and it goes horribly wrong. This is just a great comedy book. It is laugh-out-loud funny and ridiculous. It's just like, a perfect comedy of errors of these demons trying to do the right thing and doing absolutely the wrong thing at every single turn. Also, what's the shirt that one of them is wearing?
It's, yes, I, oh my God. I was going to say that. It's so funny. It is Hannibal...
Montanable.
Montanable, yes.
Montanable. Yeah. Great
Very
shirt.
Very good.
Yes,
Very
make good. Those shirts. Make those shirts. I'll buy one.
Ooh. Yeah. Maybe you should just make one.
No, I like this book as well, but man, when this dude, like two-thirds of the way through, gets just killed, I was like, oh no, this is sort of deeply upsetting.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it is hilarious, but also, like, it's such a dark turn where I was just kind of like, oh man, that poor kid had to watch his, oh wow. But yeah, I agree with what you're saying, Alex. But it was almost a little too dark. But this is enjoyable, and what's great is the art style does bring a lightness to this comic, which I think is important for this tone. I am having a great time, but the darkness sometimes is a little harsh.
The darkness creeps in, man. Well, let's talk about a light, funny book, The Sacrificers, number 19 from Image Comics.
Oof.
Written by Rick Remender, art by Andre Lima Arujo. Pigeon, our ostensible hero of the book, has been trying to help his wife, Saluda, who has taken on the responsibility of all of the gods by building a machine that's going to bring back the weather so she doesn't have to do that anymore. In typical Rick Remender fashion, finally he gets the machine working and you'll never guess what happens next.
Oh my God.
I mean, this was perhaps the most distilled down Rick Remender thing that happened. Where it's like, hey, we need this thing to happen to save this person's life. She's so close to dying. All we got to do is get this machine to work. He's like, it's working. And then I was like, oh my God, I know exactly, like you're saying, Alex, I know exactly what's going to happen. He's going to be crying on the ground at the end of the issue. And I was like, oh, there he is, crying on the ground at the end of the issue.
Yeah, and it works every time.
It's perfect. Even beyond that, everything is like, like this machine, it's working perfectly to make beautiful rain. The tears from my eyes are the rain that this machine is making.
Yeah.
And then it gets smashed.
Every month, sometimes twice a month, Rick Remender puts down that football, and surely this is the time we're going to kick that football.
We are fooled every time. And even beyond that, just being the Lucy Charlie Brown thing, he's also like, oh, if only he had done the one thing he knew he needed to do, be nice to the people. And then he rubs our faces and Pigeon's face into the fact that the people revolted right when he needed them to chill for a second. And man, it's just so heartbreaking. He gets you in the heart every time.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's unbelievable Remender writing. It's, I also think the art is just so spectacular. The use of colors and tones and the character designs are unbelievable. I'm so heartbroken for this, like, Pigeon person. So, yeah, just really impressive. Classic Remender, but in all the best ways.
And, P, I guess, like, a Pigeon is sort of like... it's like a city bird, you know?
You fucking asshole.
It's like, what do you have around your house? Like,
I wasn't mind wiped when I left New York. Like, it's not like I can't remember, you know,
like
pigeons.
When you have to, I know when you have to communicate with us, you send a raven into the air with a little note tied to its leg. Well, a pigeon is sort of like our version of that in the city.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I do know what you mean.
One of the big differences, we don't eat them.
Yeah.
Not like you.
We don't hunt them. But if you want, I can send you some, I can send you a couple pigeons.
They're everywhere. They're everywhere.
Yeah, they're everywhere here.
Yeah, you want any rats as well? We could throw some rats in the package, the care package.
I'm good. Thank you, though.
Okay. Yeah. Last but not least, let's talk about Thundar the Barbarian, number 2 from Dynamite, written by Jason Aaron, art by Cuber Ball. In this issue, Thundar is thrust into a gladiatorial arena, and then further from that, travels through time. Then some other stuff happens. Pete, you like this?
Yeah, first off, cool cover. This is just absolutely awesome. Love all the savage action we have here. This really does feel like the old cartoon and comic book form. I love this so much. This is so great. The twist at the end made me nervous in the service, but I'm having an absolute blast with this. This is great.
Pete, you're describing a nostalgia bath, which, as we all know, is you sliding into a mix of amber goo and action figures. So shouts
to that.
Don't
forget the bubbles.
And, of course, Mr. Yes. Bubbs, Pete's true god, which keeps Pete fresh and clean every morning. Pete, how many bubble baths you taking in an average week?
An average week?
Yeah.
At least eight.
Well, eight.
Which day gets to you? Which
Sunday?
Two bubble baths?
Sunday. Of course. It's a
day
of rest.
The Lord's Day, of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the funniest answer you could have said, because that's too many times four, I think, for bats. But this is really good. I love the way that they are actually bouncing between time periods and like honoring the sort of story that the dumb cartoon this is based on, which I loved.
Hey.
Well, I only mean that in that it was something that was not meant to have a big underlying story. It was just like, look, this monster, this barbarian, and this woman who's a wizard are going to go fight a random thing this 7-minute episode. And now we're like really building up to them coming together. We're getting a time travel like cause for all of their things, their problems.
We haven't even got like their friends and animals and, you know, who later join the team. I mean, this is going to get exciting.
Yeah. It's also interesting that they're fighting not only wizards, but lizards. And it's like they're
lizards
switching between
lizards.
Fighting a wizard and a lizard. And I was like, that's too close. They should
it's too
fight.
Close?
It's
wizards
too close.
And lizards can't
just
ever fight
wizards
each other?
And just lizards. It's confusing. A wizard fights a lizard. It's hard to.
What's
you know,
confusing about that?
If you're reading. Yeah. You're well,
what if
reading
it was in a blizzard? Would that be more confusing or less confusing?
I think less.
Yeah, this is exactly the problem. Inevitably, in issue 3, it's going to start snowing, and then we are going to be truly lost.
Well, you're going to be lost because that is the end of the stack, at least lost until next week when we're back with more comic book
That's
reviews.
Right.
If you'd like to support the
back
show
the
and all
stack.
The shows we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to YouTube. Come hang
sure
out.
Do.
We'd love to chat with you about comic books. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. comicbookclublive.com. For this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
And if you haven't watched the YouTube feed, you can see Pete live from his tub, surrounded by Mr. Bubbs, because he's always fully nude every time we record this.
Oh, yeah. And come fighting on. Another dude. And there's little kaijus around him.
Oh, man.
Right, Pete?
It's cozy season, and nothing compares to wrapping yourself in a Minky Couture blanket. Luxuriously soft, perfectly warm, thoughtfully made. From movie nights to chilly mornings, Minky Couture turns everyday moments into pure comfort. Once you feel it, you'll understand why it's called the original best blanket ever. Visit MinkyCouture.com or a store near you and make this cozy season your softest one yet.